I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania is known for many things, including being one of the country's most gerrymandered states or commonwealths. If you take a look at how districts are drawn, you'll see a lot of bizarre and contorted-looking shapes. The most infamous one, the 7th Congressional District, is described as looking like Goofy kicking Donald Duck. One part of the 7th is just 300 feet wide. There's a lawsuit before Commonwealth Court claiming the 2011 congressional map was unconstitutional, that gave unfair advantage to the Republicans over the Democrats. The Pennsylvania congressional delegation is 13 Republicans and 5 Democrats in a state with overwhelming Democratic registration. Another suit was filed in federal district court in Philadelphia this month. The U.S. Supreme Court heard a Wisconsin case recently, Gill v. Whitford, challenging its redistricting maps. In their legislature, Republicans hold 60 of the 99 seats, even though Democrats won almost half of the statewide votes. Well, today on Radio Times, we'll be talking about redistricting and gerrymandering. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Carol Cunningham. She's chair of Fair Districts PA, also vice president of government and social policy for the League of Women and Voters of Pennsylvania. Carol, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
And joining us from the studios of Princeton University is Sam Wong. He's a data scientist, a neuroscience professor at Princeton University, where he's director of the Wong Lab. He applies his data analysis strategies to aggregating election polls, where he posts them on the Princeton Election Consortium website. He's also working for redistricting reform. Sam Wong, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
A pleasure to be back.
Carol, let me begin with you, since you're in the trenches on this particular issue and you've been a guest on Radio Times talking about this. What has made this such a, if not hot topic, a topic that people are so passionate about?
I think people are feeling like they're not heard. They feel like they have no impact on what happens, both at the state legislature and in Congress. And they're right. I mean, there was a study in 2014 that said the preferences of the average American appear to have only a minuscule, near zero, statistically non-significant impact upon public policy. And I think people in Pennsylvania feel that strongly. They have no impact on what happens in Harrisburg or D.C., and they're trying to understand why. So as we explain that this has a great deal to do with how their maps are drawn, they say that's wrong and we want to fix it.
Well, the Brennan Center came out with a study recently looking at extreme gerrymandering or extreme redistricting, and Pennsylvania was in the top three.
Pennsylvania is in the top three, and by two of the measures, Pennsylvania is the worst. So when we look at that, we see that not only Democratic voters, but all voters are drawn into maps that are basically assigned. So those maps, the districts are decided long before anybody votes that they're going to be Republican districts or Democratic districts. There were, in 86 of our legislative races last time, there was no opposition in the primary. And in half of our races, legislative races last time, there was no general opposition in the general election. And at the same time, those 50 that there was opposition, many of those were not serious candidates. They didn't have websites. They didn't hand out flyers. They just put their name on because they already knew this is a Democratic district or a Republican district. I'll just have the fun of running for office and getting my name out there, but I'm not going to really do it. Very, very few of our districts are actually contested. I was going to say, in the last election, only three changed hands. And those three were people who were pretty passionate reformers. So their parties kind of stepped back, let the other party move in. And those are the only the ones that changed hands last time.
Sam, we talk about these crazy-looking districts, and there are plenty of them. Is that a sign of gerrymandering, the fact that a district looks so weird?
Yeah, like these crazy shapes. So the crazy shapes are good for a laugh and a well-deserved one. But one has to be a little bit careful about that, because sometimes a shape is needed to bring together a community of interest. And so I think you're right to make fun of those shapes, but one also has to keep in mind that sometimes shapes get drawn for legitimate reasons, and courts need some way to cut through all that. And so we've been doing simple analytics that don't require examining maps in detail. I think drawing maps are extremely important because that's how you draw the districts. So I think people who hold the pen should think about that. But if we're looking at, say, a court remedy, then that route is not so open to reformers and activists.
This is described as a nonpartisan issue. The Republican Party does it. The Democratic Party does it as well. Sam, is one party better than the other in either gerrymandering or redistricting to their advantage?
Certainly both parties have a strong interest in doing so. But something has happened in the last two redistricting cycles. It used to be that there was only really one bad redistricting gerrymander per cycle. So, for instance, in the 1980s, the Democrats committed a really bad one in California that got them a net of five seats. But in the last two cycles, starting in the 2000s and in 2010, Republicans have profited from a perfect storm of partisanship where they're motivated to, means where they have computers to do it, and opportunity where they took over many state houses. And so right now, even though both sides are motivated, it turns out that Republicans have committed most of the extreme partisan gerrymanders of the last two cycles.
But let me understand something, Carol. I'll put it to you, and this has to do with Pennsylvania. Aren't there certain requirements? For instance, the population has to be relatively equal from one district to another. There are certain requirements of the Voting Rights Act that have to be incorporated into redistricting. And then they're supposed to be either contiguous or compact.
Yes.
Is that what it is supposed to be?
Our state legislative districts are supposed to be contiguous, compact, and have as few divisions as mathematically necessary. That has been completely ignored. And in the last round, there was a lawsuit brought by there were many lawsuits. Amanda Holt was the most famous. She was a piano teacher. And she just on her own computer drew maps that showed far less divisions. So there was a redrawing of some maps. And then there was another lawsuit because they weren't corrected very well. Hmm. And there's another lawsuit, but that was dismissed because it was beginning to interfere with the next election. But certainly those requirements have been completely ignored, and there's nothing compact, contiguous, right, or lacking in division in any of our maps.
How do they get away with ignoring these requirements?
They just do.
They
get away with a lot. I'll tell you, they get away with a lot. When I started on this, I thought, well, this is an important issue. The more I dig into it, the more alarmed I am at how both parties have aggregated power to themselves in lots of ways. And they've assumed that Pennsylvania voters are not paying attention. In fact, when I started this in January 2016, I talked to election reform people in Pennsylvania and around the country about gerrymandering and what could be done. And pretty much was told by almost everybody I talked to, you're in Pennsylvania, there's no citizen initiative and referendum, the leadership in Pennsylvania on both sides will never give up power, and the citizens in Pennsylvania are not paying attention.
I will say that in two weeks ago in oral arguments in the Supreme Court, I was there and I saw Anthony Kennedy put his finger on this issue, which both of you are pointing out, which is that it's possible to be in some sense in literal compliance with all the rules that are written down and yet still game a system or a map for partisan advantage. And he posed that as a hypothetical and eventually got the gerrymanderers, in that case the state of Wisconsin, to admit that such a set of priorities was in fact illegal under the U.S. Constitution. Mm. So I think that one has to be careful about applying rules, because written rules, no matter how well intentioned, can often leave loopholes.
Sam, you're joining us from New Jersey. How does New Jersey stack up compared to Pennsylvania?
New Jersey's got a weird standoff. So it has a process that in which both parties are supposed to have a say. Either party puts up a plan, and then there has to be an agreement on that. That often leads to a standoff. And so New Jersey is not nearly so asymmetric as Pennsylvania, but there are still problems with creating competitive districts where both parties have an opportunity to win a district.
Redistricting, or I guess gerrymandering, has been described as elected representatives picking their voters versus voters selecting their elected representatives. What can be done about that, Carol? How do you flip that back on its feet?
Well, we're trying from a variety of angles. So there's litigation is one angle. We don't think that's the silver bullet, but it's certainly a way to call attention to what's been done. It's a way to get quick remedy, or somewhat quick remedy, so that we don't continue with these very disproportionate maps. And it's just a way to keep the issue in the public eye. What we would like to see happen is an independent commission. The United States is the only country that allows legislators any role in the drawing of their district maps. We believe that's a deep conflict of interest. And any election integrity watchdog organization will say this is the deepest problem in American elections right now, is that the fact that legislators are allowed to control the maps that manage their districts. So we would like to see independent an independent commission here in Pennsylvania. We have two constitutional amendments that have been introduced. They are both stuck in their respective state government committees. And again, that calls attention to the way the rules have been changed to allow great power for a handful of people. In one case, in the state, in the House State Government Committee, the leader of that was elected by 30,000 people. So one person of 30,000 people can completely stall legislation that's wanted by a majority of people across the state in a state with 8 million registered voters. There's something seriously wrong with those rules, and we're trying to call attention to that.
Why would someone in power, though, want to give up power?
People in power never want to give up power, of course. We know that. But the question is this harmful to democracy? And we say absolutely it's harmful to democracy. And we see a rather frightening fall off in confidence in democracy in younger people. And we see a deep distrust of our elected officials among the entire population. And we say that has to change. As a League of Women Voters person, I say, if the goal is to discourage people from voting, you're doing a phenomenal job.
Wow.
But if the job is to have a functional democracy that represents the real interests of the people of Pennsylvania, you need to fix this fast.
Well, Sam, Carol talks about having an independent commission that's going to come up and redraw these districts so that they are fair and much more transparent. Is there a computer or technology fix that could do essentially the same thing?
Well, first let me say that I would agree that courts can put guardrails on the most extreme partisan gerrymanders, such as the one in Pennsylvania, but commissions have a very important role to play. Broadly speaking, commissions are probably a better solution than rules, because no matter how many rules you put into a computer algorithm, there's always a trade-off of priorities. I mean, let's face it, these are not this is not a piece of wood that we're cutting up. These are communities that need to have their priorities respected and represented. And so it's really tough to come up with a set of rules that will blindly solve that. We're doing analysis right now of Pennsylvania to test whether there's any set of blind rules that will do the job. And we are currently coming into it with the point of view that really commissions such as the California Commission, that where everybody gets a buy-in, independents, Democrats, Republicans, those kinds of commissions seem likely to cover all the bases in a way that rules could do, but leave loopholes.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. I do want to open up the lines as well. We're talking about partisan gerrymandering, how software, big data enable the practice, also the effect that it has on our democracy and what can be done about it. We want you to join our conversation. Here's that phone number, and it's 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Our guest is Carol Cunningham. She is chair of Fair Districts PA and also vice president of government and social policy for the League of Women Voters of Pennsylvania. Sam Wong is a data scientist. He's a neuroscience professor at Princeton University, director of the Wong Lab, and has been using data analysis to aggregate election polls, also working for redistricting reform. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm talking with Sam Wong and Carol Cunningham about redistricting, about what to do about partisan gerrymandering. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. Sam, you mentioned right before the break that you are looking at Pennsylvania. So, of course, Carol and I during the break were saying, well, I wonder what Sam Wong is looking at. Can you share anything with us?
Well, there are ways to detect gerrymandering just by looking at election results and not looking at these crazy maps. So, for example, in Pennsylvania, I think, as Carol knows quite well, the Democratic districts, which are – there are only five Democratic representatives in Congress.
Right.
They won their vote – their districts with an average of about 80% of the vote and the Republican districts were much more efficiently won with only 60% of the districts. And so that lopsided difference between wins right there is a tell that Democrats have far worse opportunities and fewer opportunities to elect. And likewise, you can tell by looking at the average vote that the average vote in Pennsylvania is pretty evenly split. Republicans won a little bit more than 50% of the vote statewide. Yet the median, so the middle district, if you take all 18 districts and put them in order, the median district is now only 40% Democratic. And so that gap between the average and the median tells you that the Republicans have done the equivalent of what Garrison Keillor says about Lake Wobegon, where it's like all the children are above average. So how is it that we can create a map where most of the Republicans are above average? It's sort of mind-bending, but they've done a bang-up job.
Well, Carol, we should also dig a little deeper into Pennsylvania. As you were telling me during the break, we've been focusing on congressional districts, but it's really legislative districts that complicate this. There are 203 members of the House and what?
50 Senate, and Senate 50 districts.
So yeah. We got a lot of legislative
districts. A lot of legislators. And so, Sam, I was wondering if anybody is doing work on the state legislative districts, because we can tell that there's the same kind of gerrymandering going on in those. I don't think it's quite as extreme as our congressional districts, but the Republicans have 68% of the Senate. They have almost 60% of the House, to the extent that the Democrats have been pushed into a completely irrelevant minority in a state where the majority of voters are registered as Democrats. So there's something very, very wrong going on there. There's disproportion going on in our state legislative districts. But there's also a policy implication to that, in the fact that there's a handful of people who are in power from places where there's, you know, they're not voted by a majority of people. They're not representative of a majority. And yet they're able to completely stall any kind of legislation that would be of great importance to the state, to our communities, and to our economy. So I think there's a huge economic harm to our state in this disproportion, and we're looking for ways to kind of quantify that as we move forward.
Anything you want to add to that, Sam? No, go ahead.
Yeah, when the only election that matters is the primary, that automatically creates an environment in which candidates who are eventually successful only need to listen to members of their own party. And as turnout has gone down, as Carol was mentioning before, with voter disengagement, decreased turnout leads to only the most intense elements of either party having a say. And that leads to gridlock, in which there's no place for people to meet in the middle. There are no individuals who get pulled from both sides. And so consequently, voters become well insulated. And furthermore, as she was pointing out, if there's no opportunity to, say, retake the state legislature by either party, then that creates a situation where a party can kind of pull itself up by its own bootstraps and just keep a partisan advantage all the way to the next redistricting cycle, and then so on ad infinitum, and never have to be answerable. And so this asymmetry is a bug in our democracy that's been noticed before, but really it's gotten far worse in the last two decades. And Pennsylvania is really the poster child for everything that Carol's talking about.
And Sam, what you seem to be saying is that really the primary then really determines representation either in the legislature or probably in Congress as well.
Yes, primary. And sometimes one can get thoughtful people who make it through the primary. But in the polarized environment that we live in right now, primary voters are often very inwardly looking, not necessarily thinking about the other party or independents. And so it's a toxic environment for gerrymandering.
Carol, could the Republican control of the legislature and even the congressional districts be explained by voter turnout? Are more Republicans voting than Democrats? I know Democrats have a huge registration advantage in Pennsylvania, but what about turnout?
Well, I think there is some turnout factor in that, but not nearly enough to explain the disproportion. As Sam was talking about the percentage of wasted votes, there's a huge number of wasted Democratic votes, very few wasted Republican votes proportionately, and I think that's true at every level. I do think, I mean, when people talk about how can you break this, how do you crack this, and I think it's important that we do break it just to preserve the possibility of representative democracy in Pennsylvania, I think one way is for people to register and turn out in far greater numbers than they have. I think there was a great little article in The Onion this week about gerrymandering, and basically it was
I missed that. No, go ahead.
I think it was just yesterday.
Awesome.
And step eight is for voters to give up. And
yes.
I think that in many cases is the point. The legislative leaders would prefer for voters to give up and stay home, and they can just do as they please. And I think voters need to say that's not going to happen. We will turn out. We will vote. And we will make sure that we are heard. And there's many, many ways that voters in Pennsylvania are trying to think of how do we make sure that we're heard? Do we register in the other party to throw off their plans? Do we ensure that there are candidates running in elections where we've seen the Democrats won't run a candidate in a Republican? They are assigned to the districts. The Democrats won't run a candidate in the Republican districts. The Republicans don't bother running candidates in the Democratic districts. There are groups of people across the state who are saying, we will change this and we will find candidates and we will fund them. We don't care what the parties are doing. Both parties can they're in disarray, and we're pretty tired of them, and we need to do something very, very different. And so voters have to push back, and there's many ways that we can push back, and we're trying to help people think about how to do that.
Carol, just a quick follow-up. You talked about a wasted vote. What does that actually mean?
I'll let Sam. It's a mathematical concept.
Okay,
He's better positioned to explain
that
than
me. He's the math major.
He is.
Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, this is a social science concept that's one of multiple ways that one can think about gerrymandering. And the basic idea is that you just need 50% of the counted votes to win, or the two-party vote share. So if you add up all the Democratic and Republican votes, you need half of them plus one vote. Anything above that is wasted. So if you win your district, say 55-45 or 60-40, not so many wasted votes. That's 5 or 10% wasted votes. But if you win your district 80-20, then 30% of the votes are wasted. So the idea is it's a way of measuring packing, where you've really packed as many, you know, you've sardined all the voters of your opponents into a few districts. And so the concept there is that one can measure this. And the Supreme Court is thinking about a thing called the efficiency gap, which is a way to count up how many wasted votes there are. So that's one of multiple ways to measure gerrymandering.
And there's packing, there's cracking, there's stacking. I mean, there are various ways.
Kidnapping. Don't forget kidnapping.
Oh, I didn't know about kidnapping. Which one is that?
You take a representative, you take him or her, and you stick him into a different district. And so you can just draw a little loop around their house and kidnap them from their home district and put them into another community.
Mm-hmm. Cracking is one that's I have been appalled as I've gone across the state and looked at maps, legislative maps across the state. What I've seen is cracking to an incredible degree of all of our small urban centers. So you look at a place like Wilkes-Barre or Scranton or Allentown, they are cracked out. So what would be a voice for those kind of small urban communities is completely dissolved. So there's actually a really important study that came out a few weeks ago from the Pennsylvania Economy League called Communities in Crisis, looking at our municipalities across the state. And what they found is that we are in fiscal distress. And their report does not talk about gerrymandering, but it talks about the fact that they have made recommendations to the state across decades to have changes to regulations and codes that are basically strangling those communities, and there is no one who is able to bring forward those legislative changes to help those communities to thrive economically. So it's a huge economic driver in our state. I think the study is quite long and quite detailed and gives a lot of examples of what's happening and why. But if you look at it carefully, what you'll see is these communities have lost their voice, they've lost representation, and it's doing great harm to those communities, but the regions around them, and as a whole, to our state.
Are urban communities more Democratic Party?
Yeah, absolutely. So they tend to be more Democratic, and they are cracked out so that they really do not have any representation.
Let me get, looks like, Raymond from Chester Spring to join us. Go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Hello, Carol. Hello, Sam. I have a question.
Sure.
The open primary versus closed primary. Would that not be another way to make our votes a little bit more democratic in the lowercase d sense?
Yes.
As opposed to trying to get the legislature to do something they have never done, or get the judiciary to do something they have never done. Would not the open primary be a different route to the identical solution?
Well, Ramon, Carol said yes, but go ahead, Carol.
Well, I would say, so the question, as the election reform specialist for the League of Women Voters several years ago, I sat and looked at, you know, what are possible solutions to the situation where we find ourselves, which is a very unresponsive, very unaccountable government. And yes, there are some alternative routes. How do you address money campaign finance? We have terrible campaign finance laws. Gift ban. We have no gift ban for our legislators in Pennsylvania. Open primaries. That would be an avenue to make a more responsive government. There are a number of ways, but in looking at it, this surprisingly was one that many legislators themselves want to change. Mm. So there were quite a few bills in Harrisburg at the time when I was looking that were brought forward by legislators wanting to change this. And it seemed like the most powerful and most achievable. It's a heavy lift, and yes, they don't want to give up power, but the will to do open primaries is even smaller, and the impact is important. But I think this would be a greater impact and actually seemed more achievable. The reason it's more achievable is because there are many legislators who really, really don't like the way it's done. It's difficult for them to represent these crazy communities, but it also puts the power in the hands of the legislative leaders who can threaten and punish legislators who don't do as they're told. And many legislators actually go into office wanting to do things, and they get there and they find out it's impossible, and they would love to see this change. And that's legislators on both sides, in both parties, in both houses, who really would love to represent their people, and right now they're not able to do that.
Sam, I'm wondering, other states or commonwealths that have open primaries, we do not have that in Pennsylvania, are they less gerrymandered? Do we know?
Those are two different problems. So, for instance, there's an open primary system in California, and in many districts that are strongly partisan one way or the other. So I should back up and say that California's got a commission. They have a number of competitive districts. But in the districts that are strongly Democratic or strongly Republican, you often end up with candidates who are Democrats, Republicans, and the final general election is still safe. So I'd say that there is the possibility of doing good with open primaries, but it's a little bit of a different problem where you still need to have districts where in the general election there's a chance for both sides, both major parties, to have a say. So I think that there's hope there, but it addresses a somewhat different problem.
We are talking about redistricting or partisan gerrymandering, talking about its impact on our democracy, specifically its impact on Pennsylvania. Carol Cunningham is chair of Fair Districts Pennsylvania, also vice president of government and social policy for the League of Women Voters of Pennsylvania. Sam Wong joining us from the studios of Princeton University, where he directs the Wong Lab. And we've been talking about redistricting reform. And we want you to join our conversation, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Sam, you said you were at the U.S. Supreme Court when this case was argued before the court earlier this month. Justice Sotomayor asked a really interesting question. She asked two of them, actually. Could you tell me what the value is to democracy from political gerrymandering, and how does that help our system of government? It's a very simple, profound, and straightforward question. What was the answer to that? Do you remember?
That's interesting. Sorry, let me just back up a second and say that I want to fact check myself. And California does not have open primaries, but other states such as Arizona do. But anyway, back to Sotomayor. There was no good answer. The thing that was really striking there was that there was just not a good answer about what the value there was, and neither the other justices nor the attorneys in the case could come up with a good reason. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the best argument on the anti-reform side, as far as I can tell, is that on principle, courts should stay out of it and leave it to politicians. And so the best answer is politicians will deal with this through the political process. And that seems to be the principled answer. And so she really didn't get a good answer for her question.
Is this a flaw? The founders were flawed people. There's absolutely no question about that. Is this a flaw in our Constitution, Sam? And then to you, Carol.
Well, there's they saw a lot of things clearly, but one thing that kind of blindsided them was the rise of partisanship, what they called mischiefs of faction, which you can read about in the Federalist Papers. They didn't quite understand how strong partisanship could be, and so consequently they left this loophole in which legislators were able to draw their own districts. And so it's something that that back to the original gerrymander of 1812, it was recognized that it was an ill. And so, yeah, they kind of missed out on that one. I think it's fixable, but they didn't notice it really as much as we do today.
Well, Carol, here we are 200 years later still trying to figure out what to do about this.
Yeah, and I would say that Ronald Reagan in 1991 called gerrymandering a national scandal, and he described the grotesque, misshapen symbols of political chicanery. And that was in 1991. It is far, far, far worse now. So I would say that, yes, the legislators ought to be the ones who fix it. But if they deliberately block attempts to fix it, then we have to turn to the courts. And in Pennsylvania, our Constitution says all power is inherent in the people and that they have at all times an inalienable and indefeasible right to alter, reform, or abolish their government in such manner as they think proper. And right now we're seeing that our legislature is not at all open to the discussion of appropriate alteration and has taken power away from the people and is holding it to themselves. And if that's the way that our legislators are going to handle it, then of course, that's the purpose of the courts, is to serve as a block to the unconstitutional aggregation of power by the legislators. And so that's why there are currently two cases in the courts in Pennsylvania on this. And certainly we don't see those as the solution. We see legislative resolution as the proper solution. But if that's not going to happen, if the legislators aren't willing to let that happen, we will go to the courts, and we have.
And this is before Commonwealth Court in Pennsylvania and also before federal district court.
Yes. So there's two. The League of Women Voters has one. It's actually based on the state constitution because the protections for the equal protections are stronger, we believe, in the state constitution. So that's been brought by the Public Interest Law Center on behalf of the League of Women Voters. And then there's a new case that was just filed earlier this month by four citizens. Theirs is very interesting. They say the intent to disrupt representative democracy is in itself unconstitutional. Uh-huh. We don't even need to prove harm. We just need to demonstrate intent. And so that's an interesting case, and we'll be very happy to see how that plays out. Part of what we want to do as Fair Districts PA is we simply want on record what our legislative leaders are doing when they draw these lines. We want it on record that they are subverting our rights through drawing districts to better their own position. And either of these cases will be able to do that, and we're looking forward to having that in the public record.
And Sam, we're almost up on a break here. Other states are also wrestling with this gerrymander problem as well.
Yeah, so for instance, in Michigan, there's an interesting voter petition drive where initiatives don't have to go through the legislature. And so there's a woman in her 20s who's never been in politics before, but she's leading a petition drive to put a reform on the ballot. And so people around the United States are getting excited about this issue in the right ways.
Well, let's take another short break and we'll get back to our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking about the very exciting topic of gerrymandering redistricting. And redistricting, I should say, I've been doing the show for 30 years, and 10, 20 years ago, we would do redistricting or gerrymandering and, you know, ho-hum, not particularly drawing a big number of people that wanted to join the conversation. I have two screens here. They are filled up with people that have reaction thoughts and ideas about what to do about this. Talking with Carol Cunningham. Yes, good. And Sam Wong. Let me read a couple of comments and then we'll get some calls in. An email from Phyllis. She says, our current gerrymandered districts is a fundamental assault on representative government. Please tell listeners about the statewide judicial election on November 7th. That's in 20 days. An email from Charles, how can you tell political parties to not use software and algorithms that currently exist? Let me take Charles' question and put that to you, Carol.
Well, I would say we need to take it out of the hands of legislators because that information does exist. They should not be using partisan information. So the amendment that we're supporting would take it out of the hands of legislators and would also take away from them the possibility of using partisan data. The partisan data should have no part in drawing these lines, and the legislators should have no part in drawing the lines as well. So certainly the tools will still be used, maps, algorithms, computers, all of that will be used, but it needs to be taken away from the self-interest that currently dominates the process.
Sam, you agree with that?
I think the key there is the human beings who are using the software. So partisan information can sometimes be useful, but I think the key weak point here is not the computers, but the human beings who operate the computers.
And when we talk about partisan information, how much do people putting together these districts, how much do they know about us, Sam?
Oh, my Lord, they know a lot.
Do they?
Oh, geez.
How
okay,
much?
So
go
look,
ahead.
The magazines you subscribe to, the websites you go to, I mean, just voter rolls are just the starting point. But it is possible to take web search habits and figure out with some granularity how a precinct or county is going to vote. So they don't even need public records. They can just hire a data analytics company, and these tools are going to get better, not worse. And so there is an avalanche of information out there. I think one should be a little bit careful about being too specific about partisan voter intention, because then a partisan actor could just say, oh, I don't know, we just used web browsing data because we want to find people of common interest. And if everybody hates abortion and loves guns and hates Hillary Clinton, then, well, okay, we'll leave out the Hillary part. But they can do that and get a similar outcome without ever going to partisan registration. So one needs to be a little bit careful about that, I think.
Right, and sort of figuring out because someone believes X, Y, and Z or gets these magazines and they're going to vote a certain kind of way.
Yeah, so so the amendments that we're supporting would not allow any data other than simple population data and the maps. And so the community, you know, the public would have opportunity to have input into, you know, should it be counties, should it be townships, what do you prioritize when you draw these maps? But any kind of personal data of any sort would be completely disallowed.
What about race, age?
None of that.
Just you're a human
being.
Well,
the tricky part is that race, because of the Voting Rights Act, has to be part of that in a very particular way, but that's been used to great harm for minority populations in Pennsylvania. If you look at the way they're cracked out, look at a place like Reading, which is a majority minority population, and yet that's been cracked out, and there's no Latino voice coming out of Reading. So in Pennsylvania, minorities have been harmed by this as much as everybody else, and the sticky piece of how do you allow that information is beyond my pay grade.
Fair enough. And I was thinking about the Russians, but we're not going to go that way.
It's beyond my pay
grade,
too.
Yeah, exactly. Something we're still trying to figure out. But let me get Frank from Honeybrook to join us. Hi, Frank. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning. Just one quick comment. I consider gerrymandering and voter suppression worse than taking a knee from the national anthem. And my question was on Arizona. I understand that they do have a law on how to redistrict or how to draw districts, and I was wondering what that is and how that works.
Fair enough. Sam, you referenced this earlier. Can you expand on that?
Oh, yeah. So the Arizona Commission is one of the interesting experiments in getting redistricting out of the hands of legislators. That's a commission that has Democrats and Republicans on it. It's not quite nonpartisan, but both parties have a seat at the table. They had a suit filed against them that reached the Supreme Court 2 years ago, and their approach to redistricting has been upheld. It was upheld by a narrow 5-4 vote. So that is an approach that can work. I will say that it seems to be not quite the most bulletproof commission method. It works pretty well. From what I've been able to read, the California method seems to work better because it's got three groups of commission members, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, and a majority of all three groups has to sign off on a plan. And I find that to be an interesting wrinkle on the idea of making sure that everyone has a seat at the table.
Go ahead, Carol.
Well, another difference between Arizona and California is in Arizona, the politicians are choosing the commission members. In California, there are pools. People nominate themselves. Then they're screened.
Yeah, you can sign up on the web to
they
be
can
on the
sign
commission.
Up. They had, I think
it's
they
awesome.
Had 20,000. They had a huge number of people sign up to do that. Then they you know, narrowed it down by credential, and then they got random pools, and then they randomly selected a smaller group, and then they had them write 5 essays. Each person who applied had to write 5 essays. They had to demonstrate
essays?
That they understood the process.
Psychology.
Yeah, and so then they were chosen again randomly. So the Pennsylvania model is based on California. It would have 3 independent pools of candidates. They would be chosen randomly. And so the legislators would not be selecting people who would be representing their interests. They would be citizens randomly chosen. So you really get very far away from that self-interest that currently dominates the process.
Let me read a couple more comments. One from Frances. She said, just curious if the fact that there is a polling place directly across the street from my house, yet I have to go a couple of miles away to my polling place, is that an example of gerrymandering. You're nodding your
Absolutely.
Head, Carol.
Absolutely. That is exactly what's happening. I worked a precinct in Phoenixville this past time that is divided because the town of Phoenixville is so badly gerrymandered. The precinct itself has two different ballots, and people were coming in and saying, why do I get a different ballot than this other person? Well, because your precinct has been divided, and those lines are sending people to polling places farther from their homes. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on with our maps, and that's a piece of it.
Let me get Rick from, looks like Warminster, to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Rick. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, two things very much. I think number one is the term limits. There are no term limits, so there's no incentive them to go back and actually have contact with the people who put them in that seat. The other thing is that the voters get more and more distant from the legislators in Harrisburg because you live in a neighborhood which is in a township, which is in a borough, which is in a county. And so if you have an issue or something you want taken care of, you may go to the township. They'll say, well, you need to go to the legislator, or you go to the borough. There's too many levels of government, and you don't know which belly button you got to push.
I hear you. Rick, Sam, anything you want to add to that? He began by talking about term limits. That's an issue that bubbles up every now and then. Would that address some of what we've been talking about?
Not really. I'm going to be contrarian here and say that term limits sound like they might be a good idea. But, you know, there is something to be said for experience in all domains, whether you're a surgeon or a laboratory scientist or even a politician. There is something to be said for accumulated expertise. And you know what? I think lobbyists are actually mostly okay with having people who are new to the job, because then the lobbyists can wrap the new person around their finger. So I think one should be careful. I get the sentiment, but I think one should be a little bit careful about getting that kind of wish granted.
And in California, they had a really interesting experience. Once they had the independent commission in place, there were some long-term candidates who had never bothered to appeal to their constituents, who simply said, I think I'm going to retire. Mm-hmm. And it basically forced those who have just been coasting along in an unaccountable way to have to rethink, am I going to appeal to my constituents or am I going to retire? And there are we've got some really wonderful legislators in Harrisburg who've been there a long time, who work very, very hard, tirelessly, to know their constituents and to try to represent them. I'd love to see those people stay. There are people who haven't been there very long
both
at
sides.
All. Who, yeah, absolutely.
Both sides.
And there are people there on both sides who just coasted in because they were appointed by the leadership to take a spot and really have not done nothing to represent their people. I'd love to see those people go. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that term limits is going to solve it. I think solving gerrymandering is a much better solution.
Well, and that shows you the power of leadership, certainly in the Pennsylvania legislature. I mean, in many ways, They call the shots.
In fact, Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick has talked about gerrymandering as the foundation of what he calls hard and soft corruption, mm-hmm. because of the quid pro quo. You do what I tell you, and I'll look out for you. And that is built into our Pennsylvania system, and it needs to change.
Is it unusual that I'm talking to a neuroscientist? That would be you, Sam Wong. In fact, you were a guest on our show when your book, Welcome to Your Child's Brain, came out a couple of years ago. Carol, you have a PhD in American literature. There was a reference earlier to a young, you know, a 20-year-old woman in California who has, I would say, not the kind of experience or expertise one would associate with redistricting or gerrymandering. I mean, the fact that we have such an interesting mix of people that have gotten so involved in this issue. Sam, how do you see it?
Well, you know, it's a disruptive time in our politics, and I think it's time for people who love their country to pitch in. My own contribution is that as a neuroscientist, I deal with complicated data sets. I try to make them simpler for people to understand. And, you know, let's face it, American politics is fascinating. And I have tried registering voters in Philadelphia, and I work a whole day and I get one person registered, so I don't have the touch for that. But I'm better with data and figuring out exactly how to clarify mm-hmm. these issues for people. And so my contribution is to use all the data analytics of my field to just come up with simple ways to look at complicated problems.
And it is an important time in our history. I would say that democracy is in trouble. And people who care are looking at it and saying, what can I do? How can I involve myself? So Fair District's PA a year ago had 3 volunteers and not much interest. And then as we neared the election last year, people from both parties start saying, nobody is listening to us. We have no voice here. Where did these candidates come from? We have no choice. And we started hearing from people across the political spectrum saying, how can I participate? And the interest was not to participate in a partisan way, but to participate in a way that rebuilt democracy. So we just had a conference last weekend. We called it Reclaiming Our Democracy, the conference to end gerrymandering in Pennsylvania, which sounds rather grand, but that's our goal. And we had 275 people show up. This was a conference we started planning in July, and 275 people came, and they're passionate, and they're from all kinds of backgrounds. They bring all kinds of experiences. Most of them have not been politically engaged before, and they're saying, we need to fix this, and how do we use our skills, our abilities, our backgrounds to leverage this to get people caring and to help our legislators set down their current agendas to reclaim democracy for Pennsylvania.
So how do
I
we
will say that at gerrymander.princeton.edu, we've had an outpouring of interest.
That's so
people interested in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, North Carolina, at the Princeton Gerrymandering Project. It's been a real outpouring of interest by just regular people, by lawyers, by activists. This is a live topic this year.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons it's actually really fascinating to talk to or to talk about, only because it leads to so many parts of our democracy. But I'm wondering to you, Carol, how then in Pennsylvania, how does an independent commission get created?
Well, it has to go through the legislature twice. It has to be approved by both houses in two consecutive sessions, and then it goes to referendum. So we are working really hard to convince the chairs of both state government committees to give it a hearing. And I'll say there are people who, you know, people are really wrestling with the fact that, you know, you took civics class in high school and it worked a certain way. And youth people think, you know, we get a bill introduced and you get a certain number of names on it, and then it gets a hearing and it gets voted on. And what they're realizing is Pennsylvania politics does not work the way our civics classes did. And so they're saying, well, what do you do then? And so today I know there are some citizens who are meeting with one of our legislative leaders to deliver a bunch of postcards, and they are escalating their engagement. And we've got, you know, there are groups that are doing sit-ins in meetings, and there are people who are saying, let's get more creative. And some of that will be within our purview, and some will be groups that are moving towards civil disobedience. And there will be a wide range of public engagement as people say there has to be a way to take control from people who will not give up control. How do we do that? And some of it will be out of the bounds of what the League of Women Voters would approve, and yet citizens are looking at our history as Americans and saying, what, you know, the Boston Tea Party, you know, that's how we got where we are, and what does that look like today? We're trying to figure that out.
I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. Let me get Nazim from Philadelphia to join us. Nazim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I was going to ask why the solution to gerrymandering wasn't simply eliminating voting districts, because it sounds like the only real way to make sure that votes aren't wasted in the broadest possible sense of the term is to make sure that each one of them has an opportunity to vote for any candidate, maximizing their chance of electing a candidate, which in turn maximizes.
Sure. Nazim, I'm going to toss that to Sam Wong. Go ahead, Sam.
So first off, just to remind people who are not law nerds, federal law specifies single-member districts. And one reason for that is historically multi-member districts, which is kind of what I think Nazim is suggesting. Multi-member districts were at one point used as a means of holding down minority voters. And so it's enshrined in law as a means of protecting groups that otherwise would not have a voice at all. And so, and also people like having their own Congress critter, right? Like you like having somebody you can send a letter to. So I think that he's got a good point, but one should be a little bit careful about that because of the history of voting rights in the United States.
Anything, Carol, almost out of time. Anything you want to add to that?
I want to add to that now.
Well, then on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us once again on Radio Time. Such an important issue, and I really appreciate your expertise and your interest in this topic. Carol Cunningham, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. And can I just mention our website, fairdistrictspa.com. We've got a great, a lot of interesting material about how you can engage, but also there's a page on there that has maps. It's a way to zoom in and look at your own district maps to see what's happened to you in terms of gerrymandering in your own districts.
And she's the chair of Fair Districts Pennsylvania, or PA, I should say, Vice President of Government and Social Policy for the League of Women Voters of Pennsylvania. Sam Wong, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks a lot for having me.
You're welcome. He's a data scientist. He's a neuroscientist professor. I should say neuroscience professor at Princeton University, director of the Wong Lab. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program. We will post some of those maps on our Facebook page and on our website as well. Adam Stanishevsky, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Thanks for joining us.